Hey, Brandon.
Hey, Alan.
And welcome to Dice Over Everything, the Miniatures Gaming Podcast.
So, you know how you see people doing, like, cosplay of military stuff? And they do, like, they go back to, like, the Middle Ages and stuff, and people can pull off really good cosplay of that. You've got people who just, like, cosplay as modern military stuff, and, like, you're, like, but are you really, like, just using military gear for this? And even thinking, really? Like, if you go a bit forwards to cyberpunk, you're like, yeah, people could do some pretty cool cyberpunk cosplay. And you're like, yeah, you could totally be, like, cybernetically enhanced. But then when people get into doing, like, the full-on power armor stuff, they're like, no, I don't I don't believe that could be real and functional. And just, like, people who dress up as Sisters of Battle or just, like, anything heavily armored, you're like, no, no, you're really not that thing. Whereas you go back, like, all the stuff – like cyberpunk and back.
Really?
Like, yeah, you could actually be that.
You almost. Like, oh, do you mean like realistically at this point in time?
Yeah, like for it to be believable.
I've seen
like,
some pretty
yeah.
good Sisters of Battle cosplays. Mm-hmm. Space Marine one is a little bit harder because Space Marines have weird proportions.
Okay.
But all I've seen some really good, believable Sisters of Battle cosplays. Sorry, am I breaking your. For the sake of this argument, I will say yes. I totally understand what you're saying. Go on.
No, I've seen some of it. Some of it, they have, like, good armor. But a lot of the times when people try to, like, sculpt that, like, oh, I've got this futuristic armor, it does not work. But, yeah, you're right. A few times, if people are using, like, plastic or maybe now they're doing the 3D printing stuff to get it to look better, maybe that's what ends up being more believable. But a lot of it just isn't.
They don't look like actual metal plates is what you're saying?
Yeah, it doesn't look like it could be plate. You're like, this. I know this is just a bunch of, like, molded, like, foam. Like, I know this is not, like, a piece of armor.
It looks too much like foam and not enough, like, actual metal plate.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you're doing is actually trying to call out cosplayers and tell them to bring their A game.
I'm calling out the futuristic power armor cosplayers. Everyone, like, further
sure.
back.
Sure.
Because the people who do the like, medieval stuff, they're bringing literal metal. They're bringing a game, like, metal. Sometimes they're tarnishing it, like it's been wrecked up, or maybe
they often mostly use foam actually, and they use and painting over it.
No, but the people you actually get to see, they wear like the real like metal.
Okay, so what you're saying is, you know how metal armor that's made out of foam doesn't actually look like metal armor, and you should actually just use metal plates on top.
You should get a blacksmith to make it. Yes.
Okay, yes. Yes, I know that.
But there is no blacksmith for futuristic sci-fi ceramite armor, so nobody can buy that stuff.
Well, actually, the thing is, ceramite armor is actually ceramic, so it shouldn't be metals. They should be ceramic plates. You should go to Pottery Barn and then...
Yes. There you go.
Or
you have
do your own pottery and then, yeah, sculpt those things for sure.
That
should be cool.
We've solved why the futuristic Space Marine armor doesn't look real. You also have to be able to lift, like...
It often doesn't look real.
You'll have to be able to lift, like, 50 pots at once to hold the armor. But, you know, it'll be worth it.
Yeah. All right. So, what about them? Is that just what you've been thinking about lately?
Yep. Things have to be realistic for me.
Okay. Well, how does that tie into our topic?
You want realistic battlefields, too.
The battlefields often have to be realistic. And so you know how, similarly when you're playing miniature games, oftentimes people will start playing without any terrain, and it just doesn't look like a real battlefield, or they just use paper blocks or something like that, or big chunks of styrofoam. And then you're looking at it, and it just doesn't feel the same. Even though functionally, often giant chunks of styrofoam from, let's say, your latest computer or your TV technically creates a battlefield play style where it works, it doesn't feel the same because you spend so much time painting your minis to make them look so good, and then they're running around giant white, like...
buildings,
styrofoam with a little like white bits coming off, right? It just feels like a really big letdown. And so I do feel like oftentimes terrain can stop people from truly getting into the hobby when they realize that that's what they need to actually play the game. And so the topic today is, does terrain stop people from getting into the hobby?
Yeah, because I'm sure we know of lots of people who have like bought into the game. They built their miniatures, they painted the miniatures, and then they're like, oh, I have to put these on the board somehow. And like you hear people like, yeah, I have minis, but I've never played. And you're like, well, why have you never played? Because maybe they even have multiple armies, and maybe they don't want to admit to the fact that the next bar is to have to like put the whole thing on the table, which they literally don't have. Because these people are, it's not like they don't have friends. We know them. They have models. Mm-hmm. We have models. We buy games into new games plenty often. But that may just be like the barrier to entry is like this extra, like, okay, you've spent maybe 2 months getting these guys ready. Maybe you have another 2 months of painting terrain to go. And you're just like, oh, but I saw a new shiny. Yeah, I'm over there now. Because that extra two, double the time to get your guys on the board could just break some people.
Yeah, so when you get into a hobby, it's not just, of course, you have to, people often talk about how just having to assemble and paint your miniatures is a big barrier to the hobby. And then they will often also talk about how the complicated rules and jank, and let's say, for example, just, you know, thinking a game off the top of my head, Warhammer 40,000 has five different books that you have to collect and buy to go and play the game, or you have your codex plus the rule book and all that stuff. And no one really talks about the terrain, right, that you need to play. That's not a thing that people often talk about, but you still need it to play the game. I think we've had a previous podcast about terrain where we talk about how terrain is the third force on the table, right? You have your force and you have their force. And oftentimes in army games, that's quite a lot of people. And like you said, it takes months, if not like it can take years to finish that army, right? And then when you're finally done, you and your friend, set everything up and are looking, okay, so what else do we need? We bought the rule books. We've read the rule book and the rules. We have our armies. Oh, crap, we need to paint this entire third force. Right. Or not just paint it, but assemble, figure out how to get it, and then put that force on that table, which is the terrain. And it can often be a huge step. If you remember, we also had one about another podcast about the costs of getting into a game.
Yep.
And for a lot of those games, a huge amount of the cost was the terrain, like Infinity, right? It was like $100.
Yeah,
and that was the paper terrain.
That's not even using like the terrain they might show in their books, which I don't know. We'll get into what games actually show in their books, because that's kind of the promise. You see the pictures they show, you open the rule book to be like, oh, what force do I want to play with? And like, you here's like the artistic ideal of this game they're presenting to you. And in Infinity, when you see their like pictures on their website, they use a little bit of the cardboard, but they're often using like MDF. That's like airbrush that would take, like, those boards would take months to paint. So it's more time and more cost. So, yeah, we went into a few different games of what that costs to build a game of, like, to build tables. And we're like, oh, yeah, Frostgrave's really cheap to get into because you can find a couple miniatures in the used bin. It's like, do you want a Frostgrave table with no long sight lines and being inside of, like, buildings?
Which they tell you that's how you're supposed to play. That's the normal way. Like, you're technically not playing it the way it's intended if you don't have tons of terrain on your 3x3 table.
So, yeah, that it affects the cost of the game and nobody really thinks of it. Yep. So, just, like, obviously the biggest barrier there is for, like, young people entering the game. So, like, when we were young, what do you have around? You have to basically work with free because, you know, you're relying on parents to buy you your plastic model kits. You then just have to like root around for what you have. So our terrain was just like styrofoam, popsicle sticks, and like cut out
styrofoam
cardboard.
And popsicle sticks.
Cardboard comes with things
free
too.
Right. It was cereal boxes, styrofoam from electronics.
The white styrofoam.
Do people even have as much styrofoam these days? I don't think things come in styrofoam as much these days.
No, there's different like other foam stuff they pack things with that's not even usable for terrain.
Yeah.
And this isn't like now that we've like evolved in the hobby, we're like white beadboard styrofoam. You don't use that for hobbying. What's wrong with you? You go to
Home Depot when you get the pink insulation foam because it cuts much better.
Yeah, it's much more durable. Like, why would you be using that foam for anything? But you know, when you're young, you're like, well, this just appeared on my doorstep for free, so it's what I got to use.
And it has interesting shapes as like giant buildings, as you remember. I have a whole bunch of them actually still in my parents' place. I probably need to rescue that. And we should play One Page Rules with my old terrain.
Yeah, my parents maybe get rid of that. Anyways, I have so much new terrain, I wouldn't even want it. They're like, you can take this or you can get rid of it. I'm like, nah, I've moved beyond this.
It's okay. No way. I'm like a pack rat. I'm too nostalgic. I can't get rid of it. I remember loving some of that terrain. Some of it I was so proud of how much effort I put into it.
So I actually made some like hills out of paper mache, and on the note of pack rats, mice ate a bunch of it because it was stored in like, some weird closet. But anyways, it smelled weird too because it was made with some weird like spray stuff on it. So I don't feel like a loss of losing this paper mache stuff.
I think I made mine out of literal like electronics, like either a TV or something that my parents got, and then I got the foam, and then I would, you know, you'd cut it up a little bit and try to shape it more into a building or something like that. Some of it was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, just so I don't have to say later, don't make terrain out of paper mache, because it's literally like flour, which is like semi-biodegradable, and mice may think it tastes...
No, you definitely can make it out of paper mache. Just don't... You got to make the right amount of... Like, people make lots of things that last. You just can't put it in anywhere and moist, because, yeah, it can definitely fall apart. Maybe rot.
Anyway...
Flour lasts in a tin, okay? In a dry place, flour will last forever.
Yeah, so, well, apparently, yeah. Probably soon more edible to the mice.
If you keep it below your washroom or something, below the sink, then yeah, it's gonna rot or something.
Anyways. I think what
was tough. It was tough as children, I think. But we did get it. But the funny part is that even as children, I feel like we didn't have enough terrain for Warhammer 40,000, because back then, didn't Warhammer 40,000 play on 4x8 tables?
I had a lot of styrofoam. It was pretty good.
Yeah, in the end, sure. But at the beginning, when we started playing, I don't think we had enough terrain.
No, we just played with boxes of like, well, here's this cardboard boxing or this book or whatever. We're like, that's it. Like,
yeah, nowadays we're a little bit smarter. What you're supposed to do is have a large sheet. Or you take your parents' tablecloth, the tablecloth, and then you put books underneath and you lay that on top, and then it becomes your terrain, right? So you at least don't – they're not as obviously just books.
This sounds like a Dickens Village building guide. Anyway, anyhow, on to actual games. So
what are you talking about? This is important. If you're a young child, we might have young children listen to this. This is helping those people get into the game. Don't worry, if you don't care about terrain and making it look good, you can still play. You just gotta go old school or new school. I don't know, maybe what's old is new again.
Yeah, well, I guess, well, because we started in GW, we could talk about that. So I think maybe we'll go through like a bunch of the rule books of like games, and then like how they illustrate their games or in the products they put out. And sort of like what the barrier is or what the expectation level is for all these games and what it would kind of take to get into them, and whether there's an easy route in or whether it's likely to have people just like run into a brick wall when they hit the terrain aspect of getting their figures
and
on
whether,
the board.
And whether the book and tablecloth method actually works for that game. Because for some of the games we're going to talk about, it doesn't really quite work.
Yeah.
All right. Go for
it. So I guess because we were waxing nostalgic, I want to go back to Warhammer 5th edition rulebook, which both of us had and I was going through before this. Sure. So when you get like at the very beginning of the rulebook, you flip open one of the first few pages and they have the battlefield there. Mm-hmm. It is sparse. Like maybe they did this intentionally. all it has is a bunch of craters and like maybe two little angled buildings that they sell you. The battlefield is basically wide open. Maybe they did
is
this.
In 5th edition, did we just not notice that they wanted us to play with less terrain?
So when you get to the back of the book, they show more terrain in like the battlefield examples. And even in that,
okay.
They're like, they had maybe two sets of their terrain. And then a lot of things, they were made out of styrofoam. And they had arrows pointing to like, this rock is made out of styrofoam. So that they were really? Telling me like, just build a bunch of stuff out of styrofoam. Also on my shelf, I have the Terrain War Games Terrain Building book from 1996 they put out. And
this is nostalgia. This is why you have this. Because there's no way it's useful for you now.
No, they used the wrong type of styrofoam. As I said at the beginning, they like, here's the white packing styrofoam. It literally came with some of their miniatures. Like, you can make this out of this white styrofoam. You can get this cardboard. True. And now I'm like, cardboard has unfinished edges. Like, you have to fill in all of this. But like, they covered it up with stuff. But they like, clearly in their Terrain Guild building guide in the book, they're just like pointing to the stuff. I'm like, you're gonna have to make a lot of stuff out of styrofoam.
Well, so when they said cardboard, they're not talking about the hard cardboard like a cereal box cardboard. They're talking about corrugated cardboard that boxes are made out of.
Yeah, in their terrain building guide, they're just like corrugated cardboard. So this terrain would not be durable. Like, let's be honest about what this is.
Hey man, when you're starting out, you gotta, if that's what you gotta go with it, right?
Yeah. So in the 5th edition
do
book,
do you think people could still use that now? I think people could still do that. Cardboard, corrugated cardboard is still used a lot. Yeah, styrofoam a lot less, but corrugated cardboard there's a lot more.
Yeah, you could make it be like some rusted out building thing with like some sheet metal covering or whatever. It's not durable, but you could make it look okay. So even in their own rule book, they used a little bit of their plastic terrain, but any battlefield that had any notable amount of terrain, all styrofoam back in the day.
Interesting.
So I guess you've got some of the newer rule books for Warhammer 40K, and now they've begun putting out way more like plastic terrain sets that come with their kill team stuff and just like their intentional boxes. So I decided, okay, let's say I was a new player. I'm just going to go to their store, just right to their online store, click the terrain tab. What am I going to see that's actually going to make a battlefield? And like, they don't have very many products listed because maybe they just go out of production. They don't want to show you too many out of production things. But the one thing that looked like you could actually build something, like they call it the Battle Zone for Tyrannus or something like that.
Yeah, they're constantly rotating it.
Yeah, they're constantly rotating it.
Because I believe the battlefield terrain is one of the things they don't actually create in-house. So the terrain is actually done, funnily enough, I believe it's done in China. Because even though the main plastics that they do, they want to do it in their own in-house because it's, you know, they have the expertise. It's still cheaper to get people in China to do it if they can, you know, as long as your lower quality is acceptable.
Yeah, so it's the Battle Zone Frontieris Nacho Mound. I'm sure I pronounced that correctly, but it comes with
Did you say Nacho Mound?
Yes, because it's a nachos game. You eat nachos and play this game.
Yeah, makes sense.
Eat a mound of nachos. So, like, it's got three buildings, two, like, small antenna tower things, and a couple of walls, and it goes for about 240 American, and I would say it would cover about half a battlefield because they've got it on a sort of little square thing on their website. I don't see if it says it's made in China or not to confirm or deny that part, but like 240 American gets you half a battlefield, and it's like you could buy some other little things, but that's not going to fill your battlefield. So if you were just going right to the website,
I hate to say this, but that battlefield that you're seeing,
yep,
is 30 by 22.4.
So you need two of them.
You need four of them. Play 40K.
Oh, they're smaller. They made them look bigger in the picture. Yes, that's okay.
So you could spread out this terrain technically, right? Because
it's pretty dense.
This is a decent amount, yeah. So maybe you only need three of these.
Okay.
How much did we say that you needed? during our terrain thing when we said you want to play 40K. I think we said you had, I think you needed two. I think we put down.
Oh, two kill team terrain sets.
But we weren't talking about this one. This is like the current one, I guess, that they have out there. I think we yep. talked about a different one, but yes.
You could probably get away with two of these and some other like random other stuff because you don't want to all look the same. But that still means you're probably going to have to buy a kill team terrain set and then maybe two of these things. So you're looking at
Sector Imperialis Ruins or something.
Yeah. So that would run maybe 150 for those.
American, those are 70 we're talking bucks American. Each pack. But like each of these packs, I don't know. I feel like you'd probably want two of these Nachmund. Frontier Snackman boxes.
Yep,
it's a lot of money, like the entire thing. That's your army. You're like, yes, I finally had it. If you're just getting into this, you're like, okay, I it's a lot of money to buy an army, but you know what? I'm really into the fluff. I like the models. I want to get into this painting hobby. I'm going to blow whatever, $500, $1,000 on this army. And then once you're done that, you've painted it all up. You're like, your buddy has done the same thing. You're like, okay, so how do we play, right? We spent that extra $100 to buy the rule book and the extra $70 for the codexes. We're all ready.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, crap.
You bring your armies to your friend's house, and then you're like, oh, what do we do next? Oh.
Yeah. You know, one of the good things is they actually changed the size of the board, so at least it's now only a 44 by 60, I believe, is the normal size. That's easier to play.
Yeah.
It used to be 48 by 72. So four by six. So that was rough.
Another terrain set right there, yeah.
Yeah, so now you need a lot smaller board size, but you still need the terrain to fill it up.
Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at buying two of those and another sort of kill team terrain set, you're looking at 700 American?
Yeah, maybe around 500, 600 American, maybe.
No, so that's 145 euros here. So maybe I've got the price wrong. Because that's about the same.
It's 290 Canadian, it said.
Holy fuck.
The Frontier Snack Mud, right? 290 Canadian.
Okay. So you're looking at $800 if you want a bunch of accessory stuff too. If you're going to their website and you're just going to click on stuff on the website and say, send this to me, maybe I get free shipping.
Here's the thing. At this price, you might as well buy a 3D printer, the filament printer.
Yep.
If you bought a filament printer and then the filament and then you printed it out, it'd probably be around that cost, honestly. But then I guess you could say it's going to be higher quality if you buy the Frontiers Nachmund, right?
Yep.
Than Frontier, so maybe, but at the same time, you could have way more terrain if you bought that 3D printer.
Mm-hmm.
But do you need that much terrain? I don't know.
Do you need that much terrain for 40K? I don't know, but it's kind of the ideal. You're like, I want a really cool battlefield, and you're like, well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things is that when you're going there, when you want to actually play, like if you're actually going to play instead of just either staying in the miniature painting hobby. Right, where people, you are just a collector and you're collecting and assembling cool miniatures. You paint them up, you put them on your shelf, you think about playing, but you never actually have to pull the trigger and play. You don't have to make any of the terrain then. But then you're not in the full miniature gaming hobby, right? And this is one of the issues is that making terrain and the battlefield is a hobby in and of itself. In fact, I'm part of a bunch of like full model workshop things where people just create terrain, right? Technically, you know, miniature dioramas and stuff like that, right? Which is just the terrain for battlefield. They don't even paint miniatures. They just make and assemble and paint the terrain. It's an entirely different hobby that when we decide to get into this, you also have to do if you want to play at home.
Yeah. At least the Warhammer like rulebook, that fifth edition rulebook, said, you know, like, here's what you're getting into once you get to the very end of the book. Like, here's this battlefield. Here's
very end.
Go buy some styrofoam. Exactly. So we'll get that cost we're talking about for that GW terrain set. We'll talk about other games, but that's actually not, given the amount of terrain in that box, it's not like that's way out of line with other plastic terrain. So,
yeah, I think some of the issues with the Games Workshop Like, yeah, the terrain is not necessarily super expensive.
It's not overpriced compared to comparable products from other game makers. So
there's just the issues of how much you need for the science fiction game and how big the table is. That's the major issue with Warhammer 40,000. The game is just big.
Yep.
Right? So when we look at another game, something that is much more approachable, and you might say, you know, I think a lot of people approach and try to jump into Warhammer 40,000 because it's the most popular and the most in your face. But this is one of the things where we look at a game like Kill Team, right? And Kill Team is, I think we mentioned, it's so much easier to get into when we talked about the starter sets. But when you look at the terrain, often a lot of the starter sets come with the terrain. Mm-hmm. And so you could get the whole package for $300 or something like that. I think Canadian, maybe it's a little cheaper American. And it comes with the terrain and the board you need to play. And critically, because the board is only 22 by 30, the amount of terrain you need to actually play the game, even though it's a lot on the actual board, or it's a decent amount. I won't say it's a lot. There's a decent amount on the board. It's actually doable and affordable because the board is so small, so you don't have to fill, like, it's there's a lot less you need to fill it up. And so having that $300 box actually works. You have enough terrain to fill up the board.
Yeah, it's a quarter of the size of the big scale war game, so you can actually have like a nicely filled out battlefield at that price range. And like, it's gonna take you a quarter of the time to paint because there's a quarter of the terrain. And it comes with the box, so it's not like you have this shock factor later. You're like, okay, I pick up this box in my hand, I'm going to play this game, you're like, I'm going to paint these guys, and I'm going to paint this terrain, and you know from the get-go what you're getting into. So
it's not a surprise because the terrain is there, as opposed to oftentimes when you have games, let's say a book, 40K, or other starter sets, like the 40K starter sets, they just have the guys, there's no terrain. So when you buy that, you have no expectation of needing terrain until you start digging into the rules and realizing, it's not even some assembly required, like terrain sold separately, right? That's the kind of thing with this kind of Games Workshop starter set, right? So this, I feel like, can make a lot of people bounce off when it doesn't come with everything. But conversely, Kill Team, I think, is great for that.
Well, yeah, and like you said, with those people who just make like those terrain, those dioramas and stuff like that, and like train, whatever, model train things, their hobbies, that's like an entire hobby, and people may not, when they get into war games, be like, oh yeah, I'm actually buying into being like a model train maker. You're like, did you?
Yes.
I didn't sign up for this.
Exactly.
What the heck's going on? Because when you get to the back of that book, they're like, buy some styrofoam, texture mediums, all that, and get to work.
Buy some trees, make some trees and stuff like that.
Yes. So, yeah, at least that game sets you up perfect expectations from the start. So
the issue, though, is even though I think the one we're talking about is Kill Team Octarius, that was the new one for second edition, Kill Team second edition, they have a new starter. Kill Team has a new starter that is like a stripped-down version of Octarius, and they have terrain in it, but when you look at the box, they clearly do not have enough terrain.
No,
so it's kind of weird. Yeah, that even though that the original box could do it, like, was the thing we're talking about, their newer boxes, just to push the price point down, basically says terrain sold separately on the box.
Yeah, it comes with some of like accessories and barriers, but it says like you need. Mm-hmm. It's pretty clear about you need more terrain. So at least it is upfront about it from what I've seen. But it is varies a bit higher to bring the price down.
And again, it's just to bring the price down to make it sellable to people. So I guess the question is the issue that terrain is stopping people from playing the hobby, or is it just how expensive it is to actually get into the game actually stopping people from getting into the hobby?
Oh, like that, the purchasing part of the terrain?
Yeah, like Kill Team is small enough of a game that you could have a sellable product with the terrain and everything inside. But even Kill Team, they feel like they need to reduce the price to get people into the game by stripping out the terrain and saying it's sold separately.
Yeah, but at least they can sell you a board of terrain. Like some of the other games we may talk about, like you can't, for 40K, like, even in their own pictures, like, we can't sell you. You can't buy all this terrain.
You would not get into the game. You would not get into the game if you thought you had to have also $1,000 worth of terrain.
Yeah. Even they didn't have enough to offer, like, back in 5th edition. Like, we don't offer enough terrain to build a battlefield. We need to, like, we need to, like, hand make some stuff here.
All right. So how about some other games that have terrain or maybe don't have terrain in their starters or in their rule books?
So going back in time again, I took a look at the War Machine Mark II rulebook. Who knows what they do now? Maybe they'll sell you like 3D prints, like print-on-demand ones, because they're printing the miniatures themselves. Who knows? But they don't make their own terrain. And I went through like a bunch of the pictures in the rulebook, and everything just looked like cutout styrofoam popsicle sticks. So they were just building it on the cheap. But War Machine doesn't have too much terrain on the field.
It does. I think that's probably one of the strengths of War Machine, that you wanted some terrain, but almost not too much. It's like it was a 4x4 board, so 4 feet by 4 feet, but you only needed like 3 or 4 different blocks of terrain or something like that to make it interesting, because of how the game was a game of millimeters, right? So when the game is a game of millimeters and the terrain affects things so much, having a sparse table was more interesting. And oftentimes we would play, and because terrain is affected differently, you couldn't put too much terrain on, or certain forces, let's say Circle, or Legion of Everblight, which could see through all the terrain.
Or just move through it like it was nothing. Yeah.
Could see and move through it like it was nothing. Kind of became broken, so you had to play the less terrain. That's a way that you can do it, right? You play certain games, just need less terrain. And so I feel like War Machine was definitely very playable. You didn't need $1,000 worth of terrain to play a good game of War Machine on a 4x4.
Yeah, they told you to put like 9 pieces of like small terrain on the board, and you're like, maybe it's not even that many. And they did have like a how to build guide that showed a bunch of styrofoam and you kind of carving into it with a pencil. So like, here you go. It's pretty simple. These aren't big terrain pieces. Here's a few little terrain pieces. There you go. So like, they're honestly, the terrain in their rulebook was not impressive. I'm just like, go into my closet and I can take way better pictures than this crap. But like,
the crazy thing is, that's the beginning of Mark II. They got some really nice terrain. I think it's probably from their magazine. During their magazine, they created some beautiful terrain of like cities and bridges. And you could actually see that if you went to Gen Con. But that wasn't in their original rulebook, I don't believe. Mm-hmm. It was only afterwards that, in between, during Mark II, when War Machine really blew up, somewhere during that time in No Quarter, they started making beautiful stuff.
Yeah, so if you wanted to play the game that way with beautiful scenery, you could do it, but just the competitive version was like, when you're playing competitive scenarios, you just keep
it. Yeah, if you play competitive, you're like, why are you putting all of these beautiful buildings on the thing? Get rid of that and put just cardboard circles on the on the ground to represent it, so everyone can be perfectly in that spot. Do you remember that? That's another solution.
Yeah. No, even carrying the terrain around for that. Yep. I made 2 boards of terrain, and I could literally put them in like a close-up suitcase-sized thing, which is like a few hills, a couple buildings, and it could put 2 boards of terrain in this like briefcase-sized thing. It was pretty good.
Yeah. So games can do that, but the thing is, for the games that we love, they are terrain dense.
So should we talk about Infinity then?
Yeah, let's get to Infinity.
All right, so you open up the Infinity N4 rulebook, and so I'm like, okay, first few pages, what do they show you? They show you some terrain from a third party, made out of MDF, HDF, whatever they call it, and it's like airbrushed. It's all that. It's by Micro Arts Studio. So Micro Arts Studio will sell you like a full, what they call like a full experience game board, if you go to their website. And what did that cost? Cost about $350 American for that. This is actually pre-painted. No, it's actually pre-painted now. So it's pre-painted MDF. So it doesn't have all the accessory stuff. Like Micro Art Studio makes lots of accessories, but this is sort of like the bulk buildings and all that would cover a board.
And is it enough for an? Is it actually enough for a board?
Yeah, it's actually enough. It has some vertical elements to it. You would want to add on a bunch of small pieces, but it's pre-painted and they call it the full experience board, and it's $350 American. Like, you need more than this. Good. So I'm like, oh, okay. And then if you flip back further into the book, like, this is, you open the book, you're like, okay, what's this game gonna look like? They're like, all right, get this pre-painted MDF from our, like, third party
partners. And we didn't talk about this before, and now you actually made me excited. I'm like, oh, maybe I should go and buy it.
No, we'll get to that later, why you shouldn't.
Okay.
It'll take too long to go over. But then, so if you flip later into the books with, like, their setup guide for, like, the different levels of point games, because if you play small games, it's smaller boards. Bigger games, bigger boards. Their, like, regular size game, they have illustrations of their card stock terrain that actually comes with some of the starter packs that you sort of fit together in that. And basically the picture they show for a full-size game has four sets of the terrain packs they sell for sort of the heavy cardboard stuff. So the multiple packs, four packs of those would run about $130 American. You, of course, don't have all the cool – it has like some small little barriers and stuff like that. So that comes with some accessories. I mean, it's not going to be the coolest looking battlefield, but it's a battlefield. And I think they come with like paper mats you can put it on too. So you go buy four of those, $130 American, you have a battlefield. That's what they show in the book. And so this is all pre-painted stuff. So you kind of just throw your money at it and put it together and it's on the board.
Okay, so tell me why I shouldn't buy this.
Because we'll get there. Do you really?
Well, first of all,
you seem like you really want this answer.
So yes, so I guess one thing is
you're leaning too far away from the mic.
Terrain.
Leaning back.
Sure. The terrain, the paper terrain, I don't need it because I've already bought it. So I have already spent all this money on this paper terrain just because it's easy to put together and play. This is the base Infinity stuff, right?
Yes, I gave you a bunch from like some Kickstarter thing. Yeah.
Yeah,
and you bought
so them, I bought don't need to buy that, and I bought a bunch of that. But it's actually really, really good, and really, I think this is actually very, very important to actually be able to play. A lot of the starter sets, you know, they come with what, like you said, you need three or four. Actually, I think you only need 3.5, but you know, how are you going to get 3.5? So, or you could get three and then add some pieces yourself. But the fact that it comes with the starter helps you. First, like we talked about, helps you realize what you actually need to play. Even though it's not enough to play a full, you know, 300-point game, it's telling you need terrain. So you are not taken by surprise, like we said, with a lot of these other games. You're like we said, Frostgrave is my favorite game. Technically, it's just a rule book, so I guess you're not necessarily surprised because it tells you, but The thing with Frostgrave, the rule book, it actually does not have a full picture of a full battlefield in the book, which is a little bit weird.
Quickly on Frostgrave, like the pictures of like what the city looks like, not their miniature photographs, but they're like art pieces, give you kind of the idea, I would say, but their miniature photography, not so much. Anyway.
Yeah, they don't have a full board, but Infinity, by having that with the pack, it does help prep you to understand you need more. And like you said, in the rule book, right up there at the beginning, right where it says setting up that table, it gives you those diagrams and tells you, by the way, look at this diagram. The amount of terrain we gave you from the starter set or from the intro set is not enough. You need three more.
Here's the picture. Yeah, this is one quarter.
Yeah.
So on your picture of why you shouldn't buy that, I'm saying why you shouldn't buy that.
Oh, me personally. Okay. Yeah,
people get into the game. I'm not against that. But at our stage, if you want to say that, it's like, our level of obsession, do you want to say euphemism for that? Sure. That if you want to realize like the whole promise of the miniature game experience being like this incredible looking, almost like diorama art piece, whatever, of your like realization of like the battlefield, the flat terrain doesn't fulfill that promise. It's kind of like a stand-in, I would say. like, if you want things to look realistic, they've got to have depth to them. And these things, like, when you know they're just a flat piece of card, and like even MDF, you can keep adding little bits onto it, but there's a limit to the level of like detail that can be created through those pieces.
I think it often depends.
Yeah.
I think some of their MDF, their pre-painted MDF, looks really good, and there are different levels. I will say that sometimes, you know, with large panels, because they're printed, they will not put as much detailing on that a normal building would have. So, like, if you had just an MDF kit, right, they might actually end up carving in more terrain, but because it's, you know, the pre-painted is not actually pre-painted. It's, they have a sticker basically, right, mm-hmm. that they put on, or maybe a laminate. I don't know how it is, but it's basically a laminate that goes on the top. And because it gives you a good looking painting thing, they can fake a lot of texture that is not actually there, right? Because they just print it. It's just a sheet, right?
Yeah, they fake
oftentimes, depth. Yeah, so it's almost like, it depends on the kit, right? But sometimes the kits look worse when up close. They look great from afar because you don't necessarily, because there's the general shape, and then, but when you look up close, you see that a lot of it is just printed on and it doesn't look as cool as when if they had just sold you the straight up MDF kit where each piece is actually just a different piece of MDF, right? But then the kits with that MDF modeling on it to make it look real.
Yep.
Usually more expensive.
Yes.
They're not just the $300, right? Or the two whatever, right? The price definitely goes up. Like one of the kits that looks amazing, one of the amazing beautiful MDF kits is the Warsenal MDF kit. I think it's called
Warsenal has a lot of good looking stuff, but it's just
They have a space station one. It looks so good. It's very detailed. And when you look, it's not pre-painted. It's Cosmica Colony. It is priced commensurate to how beautiful it is.
Yes. So, yeah, I would say the games.
You just can't get around it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's the thing. If you want to get something that's affordable, like you're not going to pay more than the army, like especially for a skirmish game, right? Because one of the things with Infinity is that you only need 20 models. Like technically you could probably have fun 25 models, right? 25 models, you're switching them out, right? You have a lot of gameplay out of having 25 models for your army, which is like a few hundred dollars maybe. But then the terrain, if you're going to get fancy terrain, like I said, Cosmica, or you buy some terrain sets from GW or some of the off-brand things, like I forget the names right now.
Like Rampant. Well, we can talk about that later.
Yeah. You're paying a lot more money, right? Mm-hmm. You're paying more than your army for the terrain, right?
Yeah.
And so the question is, when you're just a new person trying to get into this game, are you really going to be like, oh, I painted my cool army. It looks cool on my shelf. I'm proud of my paint job. Now I'm going to spend even more money on the terrain that I don't have room for on my shelf. So most likely in general, it's going to be packed in a box until I go out and play it. You don't even, if you're not actually playing it and you're just getting into the game, does it seem worth it for you?
No, because if you
spend that money,
honestly, if I was a new player and didn't have like terrain around, I would probably go not the MicroArt Studio route of the 350. I would just go with lower cost, like buy Infinity's four
paper.
Packs of them, the paper, the hard heavy paper version, pay 130, and be like, okay, in the future, I can like start amassing better looking terrain, make terrain myself. But to get in the door and get playing, which you know that's what the hobby promises, like just go cheap and then build your way up.
Yeah, for sure. And I think this is the thing. The two things, go cheap when you're getting in, go cheap or be okay and understanding that making terrain is the hobby that you just got into.
Yeah, exactly.
Is what, like, is a part of the hobby you got. Like when I do that now, it's actually relatively cheap for me to create terrain, right? I do need to go down to Home Depot and get that pink foam, but one giant like pink foam is what, $25? Then I need, you know, a knife and hobby glue and not hobby glue, wood glue. And I can create decent looking boards with that, right? And then getting some plastic, some textured plastic. To make.
Yep.
But you could just use signs, right? Like plastic signs that are meant to go outside and then cut them up and then glue them on. Mm-hmm. So with that, you can actually make with like, I don't know, $50, you can make a full size infinity board that looks decent.
Yeah, I made a board for game, and I couldn't use other people's stuff if we want to photograph it. So, you know, the cost was low for materials, but there's just you have to put a crap load of time into it to make it look better. Yes. So it depends. Like, people getting into it have to figure out, do you want to buy into the scratch building terrain hobby, or do you just want to be like in the wargaming hobby? And, you know, you might just want to get your guys on the board. Yeah. Anyhow.
And it might scare you away, honestly. This is the thing. I think what, as we talk about it, we kind of see that I do feel like terrain for a lot of these games, even games like Kill Team where it comes with the terrain, can scare people away from actually playing.
Yeah, that if somebody did look at the first page of the Infinity N4 rulebook or the first few pages, saw that MicroArts terrain airbrushed, you're like, holy crap, what does it take to buy all these kits in MDF, assemble them, get an airbrush set up, like airbrush these things? It's like, whoa, that's intense.
Yeah, doing it yourself is crazy. And so the idea of buying it, you know, like, you might want to buy it. It's fancy. It's super nice. I don't think if you bought it, you would feel sad. Like, even if we bought it, I don't think we'd be sad. No, the thing is, it is, you know, $300 or $400 or $300 American or something like that, right?
$350 American.
So you have to be willing to pay that, right? As an extra cost, especially when you're talking about Infinity, where you just bought the thing. You thought it was cheaper because, you know, you can buy the double sets for $200 and you have two armies, two 10-man armies, right? It's it's around $200, so $100 each army. And you're like, oh, this is affordable. And then you're like, oh, and now I have to spend 2.5 times that 1.5 times that to get the terrain to actually play, right?
Yeah, that's the sort of the basic level terrain that's easy to get on
the board.
Yeah, it
can be frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, using books and a tablecloth doesn't quite work for Infinity because you're supposed to be playing in cities. Mm-hmm. Books and tablecloth are great for modeling, let's say more fantasy. You're thinking more like rugged, stony terrain, right? You can kind of get that verisimilitude right. But when you're trying to use that for buildings, which Infinity is modeling, it doesn't quite make sense.
So that makes me think about, so I just read before this the Malifaux 3rd edition rulebook, which you can download for free. And I don't know, maybe they thought about what we thought about, because when you get to the table section at the beginning of the rulebook, they don't even put a picture there. There's no picture of a table. Like, we think of like miniature gaming rulebooks and like, okay, there's gonna be a picture in the table section. Nope, no picture of a table. They just kind of talk about it. Then you get onto like the terrain section later in the book about setting up the board. No pictures there either. They're like, use a 3x3 board and cover approximately 1/3 of the surface in terrain. And you're like, that's a lot of terrain.
1/3,
Malifaux 3rd edition rulebook. I just read it this morning.
That's even more than I thought. I don't think I play Malifaux 3rd edition. I don't think we've ever filled 1/3 and then spread it out. That's a lot of terrain.
I mean, we could have because we have terrain, but we didn't because we're like, there's no way they want that much. But right from the rule book,
it's even more terrain than I thought. Oh, maybe we made shooting stronger.
Yeah. So what they do say, though, back to what you were talking about before, is they're like, you can just use books and cups as terrain if you haven't like amassed a lot of terrain.
Really?
Like, it clearly they must have thought about this, because they're not showing you pictures to scare you off.
Yeah.
And they're just like, just use books and cups. Don't have a freak out here. But they do.
Three by three, 1/3. That's so much terrain. Yeah, that's like as much as Infinity.
Yeah, like a few years ago, they started making their weird scapes terrain. They made three different kind of like modular buildings, but they're they're actually pretty small buildings. And they're like $65 American each. It's like, you can't fill a board with these. They're really cool looking buildings, but like they don't even show pictures of them in their rulebook. Probably because I have no idea why they didn't. Because they would look nice in the rulebook, but maybe people looking at that would have just been freaked out of what it would cost to put a couple sets of those on the board.
Wow.
So yeah, they just shied away from it altogether. So for other games, I was looking at like, because there are, just looking at new releases, like Cyberpunk Red Combat Zone has come out lately. Fallout's been putting out miniatures for their Wasteland Warfare game a lot. And like looking through the Cyberpunk Combat Zone book, because a bunch of our friends have bought into it, they basically have committed like complete blasphemy, I would say, in making their rulebook. You look in their first few pages of the rulebook, not only is there no pictures of the battlefield, the miniatures are unpainted in their pictures they put in the rulebook.
Now they're like, saying you don't even have to paint your miniatures. Just put them on the base and get playing.
Yeah, it's like, well, I guess we could say they're maybe appealing to their RPG audience who was in the RPG and then branched into it maybe. I'm just like, how low have you people sunk in the miniature gaming world? Like,
you're trying to make it easy for people to get into. Yeah. Painting your miniatures is an entirely different podcast. Whether or not you should be, you know, drawn and quartered if you don't paint your minis can be an entirely different podcast. We don't want to talk about this time.
Yeah, so like they must have thought about it too. Like clearly they have painted pictures of the miniatures. They could have put those in, but maybe they didn't want to be like, oh, you're gonna have to do all this before you get playing. They're like, no, you can just get playing. Here you go. You have your figures. You can get playing if you like assemble them.
And I believe the starter set comes with terrain, some terrain. I'm not sure if it comes with enough.
Yes, but they did not. When you get to the table section, they didn't even photograph that. There's no photographs of tables. They have a top down view of, I think it's the mat, the paper like mat that comes with it.
Yeah.
But nothing on it. So it's like, you could have done this, but they must have explicitly decided to hide that terrain aspect. So yeah.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it does come, it's supposed to come with the terrain enough to play the game, I believe.
It came with, like, I think it said, like, it talked about playing with the terrain, like, it becomes more interesting the more terrain you have, possibly, but, like, the terrain
picture
is...
has terrain.
Yeah, it's got some walls.
I haven't actually bought it. I did see it at Gen Con, and I thought the terrain came with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the starter terrain comes with stuff that snaps together. It's got like plastic bits that you snap the card into. But
yeah, multi-part combat zone terrain set. Yeah, it comes with the terrain.
Yeah, just when you open the rule book though, they don't put that in there. They don't put any of it. They're just hiding
it
all
from
you.
But at the same time, Cyberpunk Red Zone is only $130 and it comes with the terrain that you're supposed to use to play.
Mm-hmm.
So that's even better than, you know, Kill Team Second Edition in terms of having everything you need to play, including the terrain. It has the terrain, although it doesn't have it in the rule book, it has it in the pictures for the when you buy it, right? It shows the terrain, right? Mm-hmm. Saying, you know, this is part of the game. And then it has it, and again, you don't have to paint it because it's just cardboard, I believe, or cardstock.
Yep.
So it's giving you everything that you need to play in the box to set up your expectations. You don't even have to paint it, just like the Infinity stuff. And it's included in the price when you start.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, this is, you could almost see that this is an evolution of what, you know, they've thought about all these different things. They don't have it in the rule book, so you don't get freaked out, right? About trying to make the terrain. It comes with the terrain anyway, so you can just have it with the cardboard stuff. So even if you don't care about having nice terrain, you have enough to play the game and make it interesting.
Yeah, and they tell you that the game can become more interesting if the battlefield is not wide open, which the battlefield will be wide open if you only play with what they have. But they're just giving you a nudge, not a
to add more terrain, but it has mm-hmm. enough terrain on it to be interesting enough, right? Yeah. So yeah.
So and who knows?
That price point is really good. So when are we getting into Cyberpunk Red? We'll see, I guess. Once, right? What's that good for pirate ships?
I mean, our friends. A whole bunch of our friends bought into it, but I'm like, I want to finish a bunch of projects before this. There's yeah. so many projects on the list that I think are probably true. Cooler. But yeah, I skimmed the rules. Skimmed as I just looked at pictures.
Now that we're just talking about terrain and the fact that it does a decent job with that, it almost seduced me. I'm so easily mm-hmm. seduced by new games. Just the fact that we're like, oh, this is a good starter set. Even though I don't necessarily really want to play it super much. Although, the game is pretty good. I already mentioned it to you, but...
Oh, sorry, which game?
Cyberpunk Red.
Oh, okay. All right, I wasn't sure you played it or not. Okay.
I played a demo of it at Gen Con. Not like a full game, just a demo. Okay. So I don't know. I don't know if the full game with the balancing and everything is good, but the core gameplay was interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think we covered enough different games there and what they're like presenting you for the idea to get an idea of like what they can show you and what...
Mm-hmm. We have one more that I think... has been doing really, really well recently, which we have yet to mention. That's BattleTech. So BattleTech, when you buy BattleTech, so there's two different types. Alpha Strike, which needs fully modeled terrain and a 6x4 board, and then the original BattleTech, which, you know, as much as we don't really necessarily like the overly detailed gameplay, the actual ability to play the game is really, really tight because they use paper mats and squares.
Yep.
You are not encouraged, basically, in the original game, to model the board. It's just you just buy these paper mats. And to be fair, if you buy it from BattleTech instead of printing it on your own, it's ridiculously expensive. It's like 30, 20, 20 bucks or something for a... poster basically, or 25 bucks for a poster with squares on it, right?
Yeah.
Arthur, yeah, so it's not cheap to get these kind of things, but at the same time, the starter set comes with enough to play, right? Two of these squares to go and play, and that's what you need to play because they're squares, right?
Hexes, yeah.
Yeah, they're hexes, sorry. squares in the game playing sense, yeah, but actually hexes. Yeah, because they're hexes, you can just take it out of the box, put those guys on, not paint them if you don't want to.
They're pre-assembled.
Play on
yeah.
these mats. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the mats are there right in the thing, so you know what you need to do to play. It's really good for that type of gameplay. Each one of these boxes often comes with a couple of these mats, and so. Obviously, if you want to get a new one, you can even draw one, honestly. Draw the squares and make your own mat if you wanted to. But you can also obviously find them online and just print them mm-hmm. in little smaller letter sheets and then tape them together, right? So that is the cheapest, simplest way to get in the game. And again, we're talking about, you know, differences in gameplay. You know, if your game only uses paper sheets and then just has it written on the paper that this is like a larger building, right, or a larger size, right, a plateau or something like that, that makes the game a lot easier to play. Terrain is not an issue in the original BattleTech to play. Everyone uses these paper mats.
Yes, it's meant to be a simulation, so like it's on a simulated battlefield, sure.
Yeah, because it comes from, you know, a different time, a different era where simulated, cool-looking, awesome 3D terrain was less popular, right? Like, the same thing with Starfleet Battles, you know, and then we've played Silent Death, right? A lot of these spaceship games, they're just large mats, right? You don't put any terrain on it.
Yep. Yeah, we played Alpha Strike as well, and like, this would have felt better with terrain, but you're like, it wouldn't have fit on the table because it would have to be way bigger. I'm like, yeah, somebody would have had to build all that terrain, which is not even the scale.
Which I am doing, but I haven't yet painted it. So, that's the good thing, I guess. Yeah, that goes on to one of the next things is that, I guess that's a segue in some ways. Once you have one game, let's say you got into 40K, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got into 40K, you finally finished your $1,000 worth of terrain, and then you're like,
you
know,
order
what?
It from the GW web store because no local store would keep that many packs. Yeah,
exactly. And then you're thinking, you know what? I want to play Age of Sigmar, or I want to play Infinity. Well,
those bunkers aren't going to help you there.
Exactly. Now you're like, oh my god, does that mean I have to buy another $1,000 worth of terrain, not including the armies, just the terrain, and the amount of effort I did? This is a huge issue, right?
Yeah.
Especially because, like we said, if this is not actually part of a hobby that you enjoy, it feels like a chore to a lot of people to set up that terrain.
Yeah, because like I want my army, but like the board is just, I mean, if you're not into that like modeling aspect, you'd be like, I like painting dudes, not having to like dump piles of paint onto this giant thing. It's like a totally different
building
painting.
Yeah,
it's a totally different approach to painting too. Like, you're not going to bring your little tiny bottles of paint and paint that. You're going to have to figure out how to make craft paints work for you, airbrushing work for you, different washing techniques. You're going to have to learn a like different skill set to develop.
Well, I use my little bottles of paint.
So do I. I just like how this paint works better. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it becomes a huge issue.
Yeah, so it becomes a huge issue with switching games, and it adds to that type of inertia to be able to move to a game. Or let's say you got tired of 40K, are you going to buy new terrain for this new game to get into it? Probably you will, because if you truly got into it. But if you just played a game and you kind of bounced off of it a little bit and you want to start a new game, you having to make all that terrain or get that terrain again is another barrier of entry every single time you switch a game.
Yeah, so my one thought is that honestly, like, usually not everybody owns the terrain, which is kind of a fix to this problem. Okay, maybe your friend owns the terrain for one game, maybe you own the terrain for the other game. So not everybody always is the owner of the terrain. Like, the ideal is you have like terrain so you can invite people over, but maybe the solution is you just don't own the terrain, unfortunately, as one of the solutions.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a thing that happens a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like whenever we play for games, I think it's generally I have a bunch of terrain and you come over and you just play on my terrain. Like, you don't have a Blood Bowl pitch, right?
Nope.
You just have a Blood Bowl army.
Nope. And for a long time, I had no fantasy terrain either. Like, until
really?
I had the War Machine terrain. That's true. Yeah, I had War Machine terrain for a long time, which was fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah,
but it wasn't ideal.
I don't even know where a lot of my War Machine terrain was. I think I created more War Machine terrain, or maybe we just use your War Machine terrain for the longest time.
And that comes to the other solution, that if you decide to play at game stores, like, it's the other solution to the terrain problem. Well, if you become part of the game store, maybe they have a club there, maybe the store puts together the terrain, you're like, well, I play at the store, but I don't own terrain. And just thinking to all those guys we talked about who bought into that Cyberpunk game, because our store has an Infinity Club, Infinity has the Cyberpunk aesthetic. Those guys aren't building terrain for Cyberpunk, I can tell you. They're going to come to the store, they're going to take out the Infinity terrain, just not as much of it, and play on an Infinity board and make it cool with lots of levels, because there's just so much terrain available.
Why not? Yeah.
So they're not going to have that barrier to entry, our friends who bought into Cyberpunk Combat Zone, because they're just going to go to the store and play.
And if they play at their own places, I'm sure they have Infinity terrain already. So they
can
probably do that
does.
At home. Probably, yeah.
It's one of the friends owns the terrain. So, you know, you're set.
Yeah.
So those are two big ways I can see to get around. Like, you're literally not even having the terrain in those solutions.
Yeah.
So.
And I would say going to a store is one of the easiest ways to get around this issue, and some ways makes it a non-issue for people to have access to a store. And so this is one of those ways that your store adds so much value to your community in helping people get into the game, feel like they don't have to, you know, pay $300-$400 extra to get into a game because they just need to concentrate in their army, and then they meet up with their friends and play at the store, and then they can, if they want to, over time, build up their own personal collection, but they don't have to do that. The store is there for them, right? They can come to the store, play there, and all of the other benefits of the store, right? Community and everything. Terrain is a huge one. A space to play is a huge one.
So let's say you decided that the game store is not so much of an option because you just want to sit around drinking beer weird hours with your friends, and then you've got to be that friend that owns the terrain. What would you suggest to people who are just building up their collection to do to get terrain? Let's say they've got the cheap, maybe they've got some cheap stuff, but now they're like trying to build their real boards.
I think looking up tutorials for pink foam terrain is ideal. Their pink foam is so easy to work with, which is why it is basically kind of taken over the homemade terrain landscape. Ideally, honestly, there would be more 3D printing pieces where you can get like doors and windows and things like that, and you can just create the overall structure with the pink foam and then put these little things on. And there is definitely some if you do that, but again, that's not necessarily accessible for you at home. If you're doing that, right? But if you're creating, for example, a very simple infinity kind of futuristic building, if you just look online about how to create simple things out of pink foam, where you create the frame and then you put on, like I said, I literally mentioned this, it's so simple, you just need to look up a terrain tutorial, use pink foam, cut it out, learn how to do that with the wood glue to stick them together because wood glue is very, very strong and it'll stay. And then having the signs, like for sale signs that are meant to go outside, and cut those up as plastic to put on the outside. You don't even necessarily need to do that if you're playing at home, because your friends should hopefully treat your stuff better. But sometimes it's nice to be able to put textures on the outside, right? That by itself is... The thing is, you can carve into pink foam, and you can do a lot of the detailing just by carving into the pink foam. So you use a knife, basically, to striate it, and then you can put in just a pen, and you go over all of the knife cuts to make interesting textures. So you can do stone, you can do, you know, like paneling, you can do all that kind of stuff just with the pink foam. It's super cheap.
You can even just pick up like wood filler at the hardware store too to put over top of the pink foam to give it a tougher layer. So, and it gives it a bit of the texture too, because it doesn't look as much like styrofoam. It now looks like
More like a rough concrete-ish kind of texture, right?
Yeah,
those are the kind of things where if you just find tutorials online, you'll kind of realize it's quite simple and it doesn't take nearly as long and it's not nearly as daunting as it seems at first. And it's not that expensive, right? Like I said, $50, you can fill up a table with whatever, like one table of whatever game you're playing. You need $50 of materials. You can fill up the entire thing, and some of it you can reuse if you're building a new table, right? So it probably ends up taking a few weekends, right? That's the biggest thing, is that building it, right? So you still have to paint it afterwards, right? But building it takes a few weekends, especially if you're beginning. But it is really simple. And the biggest thing is, if you're into miniatures and assembling miniatures, you will probably find building terrain pretty enjoyable. It is a lot more enjoyable to do the hobbying of building this thing out than I think a lot of people will expect when they first think about it, right?
Yeah. And it feels hard to screw up because you're like, I'm just working with like a few cents worth of foam at once. Like, you're not using the whole sheet at once. You're like, well, this thing's worth like pennies to cut apart this little tiny piece of styrofoam. I'm going to make like a little extra bit that sticks out. So like, oh, I cut it wrong. Okay, I'll just make another one. Like, there's this whole giant several square feet of it. So you just do it again. And you just use a bit of hot glue to put it together, and it goes together really quickly. So.
Yeah. So there's a lot like that is the biggest thing, is it's just enjoyable. It's a great hobby. I know we said, oh, you're getting into another hobby, and oh, that seems so daunting, but that is one of actually the best things about building terrain, mm-hmm. is that it is a great hobby that you will probably enjoy if you're into miniature gaming. And especially if you're into kickbashing models, you may be surprised at how fun building terrain is if you haven't tried it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I built the sort of example board for our game out of just mostly styrofoam and like other random bits of stuff because it had to be fully homebrewed. It was pretty entertaining to do because you're just like, oh, what's my vision of this thing? It's not going to be perfect. But honestly, I don't know if I'd recommend... I'd recommend building a bit of that, like especially things like rocks and that. Yeah, styrofoam's mm-hmm. the way to go, like I talked about with GW telling you to do that back from their earliest editions. Uh-huh. I would honestly suggest looking at sort of the rampant like modular terrain kits too, because it helps for other terrain I've built. I found to have some like that pre-molded plastic stuff and then combine mm-hmm. that with homebrew pieces. So like, okay, here's like the detailed parts. And then there's kind of like the back pieces of it that don't matter as much. So mm-hmm. like, cause that the rampant modular terrain stuff comes in a whole bunch of different styles. So if you want like a nice ideal looking board, you get a few kits of that. And then you sort of like kit bash some stuff to go on top of it to fill in the bigger lumps for the board. That's
sure. Rampart, you mean?
Rampart. Yes.
Yep. There's Rampart and there's also Mantic. Mantic sells a lot of different pieces that you can use.
Yeah, I own a crap load of the Mantic stuff, and honestly, because it all clips together, it has like the clip look to it. Like, I've bought more money worth of that than I want to say, but mm-hmm. if I were to do it today, I would suggest going the Rampart direction.
I think both of them are good. I think mm-hmm. one of the things is, if you have access to... I think I mentioned this and I glossed over because the costs go up, right? And my consideration was the general costs. You can keep the cost super low and on a budget because I feel like, especially if you're starting into the game, you want to keep those costs low, and that's one of the biggest barriers. But totally, I agree. When you want to add things and make them look nicer, you can use Rampart. I think Mantic, because they're smaller pieces, you can add them for detail pieces. Yep. But if you have access to a 3D printer, you can find lots of things like doors, like gribbly bits, right? Like doors, AC units, panels, futuristic windows, or actually cathedral windows. And if you can get people to 3D print that, or if you already have that on your own, which maybe that in the future this will be a very common thing. People don't even buy miniatures; they buy a 3D printer and they start printing those stuff off. If you can just either order that using like actually my mini factory does have a printing service that you can probably find for certain things.
Yeah, there's people on Etsy who put stuff up. There's other websites you can go to where they'll just like give you a quote from a bunch of like 3D printers in your area. So.
Yep. So if you can get access to that, that is actually the cheapest thing. And you can find exactly what you need for your printing from these, you know, Thingiverse. And you can then gribbly up your buildings using the base of pink foam. But I think the important part, why I said, you know, pink foam and these cardstock is because that's the beginning, right? You technically don't need any of the gribbles to start off. Mm-hmm. You can even save gribbling it up to make it look good for a little bit later.
Yeah, but for your ideal terrain, I suggest going, I lean more towards plastic. It's like, okay, I want this thing to have the true look. Not be like some flat version. Like the more plastic you get, the better it looks, but obviously the cost keeps going up. Yeah. And because of that cost, most places won't even sell you like a whole building. The fact that those GW Frontier kits were even have four walls on them is pretty amazing mm-hmm. because a lot of the terrain kits, it's like here's this ruin of like two sides. Like selling you a whole plastic building, whoa. That's extreme. Yeah.
And just to be fair, I do have an entire cathedral's, like, entire board cathedral's worth of Rampart terrain. So I'm not saying that that's, like, a bad thing. I'm just saying for someone getting in, that can often be a little bit, you know, more than they would want to spend and become a little bit more daunting depending on how much Rampart terrain they use.
Yeah, you're just saying you've owned that stuff for a while. You're like, oh my god, actually doing the project. Whoa.
I haven't painted it. That's right. I've assembled it. I magnetized everything, but I haven't actually finished the painting. because I have way too many other projects going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, terrain
projects. Including other terrain pages, including other terrain projects that I've finished in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Oh, well, I have another thing.
Suggestion of what to buy?
Another suggestion to make things simpler. To get in when you're getting to the game.
Sure.
For the terrain. To make it simpler, if you're making your terrain, this is somewhat also included with 3D printing, but if you can get miniatures that are half the size, you can play in smaller buildings. Or you can play, like, if you play Chain of Command at 15 millimeter, right, or 1 to 100 scale, then your buildings can be much smaller, and those are so much easier to make.
Legions Imperialis and, like, Drop Zone Commander. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, except Legions Imperialis is super, super expensive, but yeah.
Oh, well. The Mantic version. Mantic Epic Warpath.
Oh, that's true. The Mantic version. The Mantic version is going to be super cheap. I see. All right. So, yeah. So that's our thoughts on using terrain and whether it and how it's a barrier to getting in, and some of our solutions to that if you are new to the hobby.
Mm-hmm. I'm just gonna say I'm biased and I don't operate anything like that anymore. I'm like, what? Just getting terrain? Nah, I want the crazy terrain projects now. Only crazy terrain. So
yeah, that's like I said, the most important way to get into to not have it as a barrier is to find it as super rewarding and being a main reason why you like the hobby. Building terrain. That is the number one thing that'll make you not have an issue with terrain in the hobby.
Yeah, you won't be worried about spending money on it. You're like, no, I want amazing terrain. I want to spend money on this. And then you're like, oh,
for example,
I'm spending money on the hobby.
Mm-hmm. For Carnivale, I'm like, oh, an excuse to build an entire Venetian city with a bunch of canals. Oh, don't mind if I do. I just need to buy some miniatures first so that I can have an excuse to make this crazy terrain project.
Yeah, but that'll mostly be styrofoam popsicle sticks, I think.
Well, so, of course, you gotta have styrofoam and popsicle sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And wood filler.
Yes, that's key. Yeah. Those are the key ingredients of making a Venetian city.
Yes, and, well, there's a lot of things going on besides that, but yes. So that is that's that, basically. If you have any questions about terrain, or you're having any issues or trepidation about the building steps that we talked about to build the terrain, you can give us a shout. Email us at contact@diceovereverything.com.
Or find us on Facebook. We're Dice Over Everything.
This has been Alan.
It's been Brandon.
Bye.